The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
You're listening to the Big Red Bench podcast on this Monday afternoon. Rory O'Hagan here, and Colm O'Sullivan is here as well.
Hiya, Rory. And we're actually back in the same room for the first time in about 4 or 5 months, I'd say.
This is weird. Now, we are socially distanced, obviously, but like the fact that I have not been in work since March 12th, nearly 4 months because of the coronavirus pandemic. I've been working from home since. So this is my first day back in the office. My first day seeing you in almost 4 months.
It is indeed. And we're here. We're in the studio, as I say. We're a good 2 or 3 metres apart, at least,
yeah.
Across a big desk. And we're ready to talk sport again because things are back up and running now for a few weeks, Roar. And as the weeks go by, there's more and more stuff and there's more and more announcements. And the Premier League was back again this week.
Yeah, it feels like everything is slowly getting back to somewhat of a normality anyway. I suppose the Premier League was kind of the first major sport back out of the gate, and that's been going back, that's been on the last couple of weeks. Something that hasn't really captured my imagination, I have to say. Like, there wasn't much to play for with Liverpool winning the league title. They eventually did that, I suppose, last week or the week before, even despite the defeat to Manchester City. But overall, the Premier League, it's very weird without supporters in there, and I have found it difficult to watch entire games. Now, I have watched a couple. But I have found it kind of hard to watch full games with the commentary, without the or the crowd noise, without the or with the crowd noise. It's been a bit odd.
It's like saturation coverage at the moment as well, because they're literally showing nearly every game on live TV because obviously people can't go and watch them, so they need to broadcast them. We never give out about having too much football on TV, but like, it's literally, you don't get too excited now because nearly any time you turn on, there's going to be a match on.
I'm surprised there's not a match on now this afternoon as we're recording this, but. I suppose I was watching bits of it over the weekend. I did get to see John Egan score yesterday for Sheffield United. The Cork man getting his first Premier League goal. He now has goals in all four divisions of English football, which is an incredible record. But a fantastic goal for him yesterday. Finished it at the back post. And good to see the Cork man on the score sheet and playing very, very well in that Sheffield United team who were pushing for Europe.
They were pushing for Europe, and they came back from the lockdown, and they've had a bad run of results really since they came back, Roar, and they're kind of falling away in terms of, they were up there with Wolves and Man United pushing towards the top 4 or 5, whereas now there's that bit of a gap down to them, and Arsenal are a little bit behind, Wolves are thereabouts still, but United really are the one now who are pushing up with Leicester and Chelsea. They're only, I think, 2 points behind Chelsea and 3 points behind Leicester, Manchester United, so they're the ones fighting it out really for that European spot now. And Sheffield United, unless they make a very, very successful run in the last 5 or 6 games, it looks like their chance could be gone. Even the point, probably, they would have hoped for more against Burnley yesterday.
Yeah, they're 7 points off Manchester United in fifth, as you were mentioning. So it looks like their goose is cooked as far as European football is concerned. Manchester United's form has been red hot since they've returned. They're 16 games unbeaten now. Another good win for them over the weekend, and look very, very good at Old Trafford on Saturday. They beat Bournemouth by 5-2. Mason Greenwood, certainly.
He's 18 as well. Like, he looks great, doesn't he?
He scored 15 goals in his debut Premier League campaign. Something else. Bruno Fernandes has absolutely transformed that team. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has them playing some decent football. Albeit the pressure off, I suppose, to a little bit. And maybe the fact that there's no fans there as well, I think, could be an issue.
I was watching Match of the Day too last night, and I was wondering, is that working in United's favour?
Because there's less pressure from the Old Trafford crowd. Like, any mistake isn't immediately like called out from the crowd, and there's not the pressure from the fans for any slight mistake. So they're playing with expression, they're playing with freedom. It's actually a pleasure to watch them play. They're playing some very, very nice football. They're scoring some fantastic goals.
They got some lovely goals the other night, or the other day, against Bournemouth. I mean, Fernandes got the lovely free kick, Mason Greenwood's goal was great, and the football they were playing, it was like Manchester United of old, I think, to a certain extent. And you would kind of think they could really click ahead of next season now if they get in 1 or 2 signings. There's a lot of talk about maybe Jack Grealish. There's talk about Sancho and 1 or 2 other guys. If they got Grealish, Sancho, and maybe 1 other signing, you'd imagine what a squad they'd have next year, along with the likes of Fernandes, if Pogba clicks, Mason Greenwood, Rashford, all these guys.
They're a young squad as well. They're hungry. Solskjaer has them playing some very nice football and playing to their strengths. Nemanja Matic has signed a new 3-year contract today as well, or a new 2-year contract. So he's going to be at Old Trafford until 2023. He's been playing very, very well, kind of anchoring that midfield for the Red Devils. But yeah, look, there's talk of United being title challengers next season. That could be a little bit early.
Are they still a bit behind Man City and Liverpool, who will probably strengthen again as well, do you think?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, like Man City, you'd expect to come back at Liverpool next year. Liverpool gone off to Jurgen Klopp said something very interesting last week. He says they're not going to defend their title, they're going to attack the title next year, which is very, very interesting. So that's like, you'd expect it to be Liverpool and Man City again, and if United can get up there with Chelsea, who are probably going to improve again over the summer, and
they've got Werner coming in as well from Germany, and they've signed one or two other guys as well on top of what is already a young improving squad.
Yeah, exactly. So it is going to be very interesting to see how it all pans out next season, but that Manchester United team is looking very, very nice indeed. But just to go back to John Egan yesterday, his first Premier League goal, just his second for the club. And he says he hasn't scored a goal like this since he was playing for Bishopstown.
When I used to play Gaelic football, probably the last time I hit one like that. But no, listen, the skipper's done well. You know, he's flicked the ball on and he's kept it alive. And, you know, I just timed the run nice, and I suppose it was a nice finish, yeah.
Yeah, you can take the Corkman out of Cork, but you can't take the Cork out of the Corkman, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was watching him chatting last night on BBC as well in Match of the Day 2, and he's a real kind of down-to-earth Cork lad, is John Egan, and it was great for him to get a goal, you know. It was just brilliant. Mm. And even his reaction, the celebration, he was like, I finally got my Premier League goal, and he was delighted with himself. And it was a nice goal into the back post as well. He just booted into the back of the net, and great to see for him. So we're delighted for him.
Yeah, no, great, very nice guy is John, and Greenwood legend like myself as well. So good to see him do that.
Similar standard as well, Roar.
Man City losing to Southampton. Yes, it might have been a bit of a surprise after they put four goals past Liverpool, I think.
What a goal in that game as well.
Shea Adams, yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah,
fantastic. What a goal. It was a bit of a surprise, but I think Man City are pretty much safe with second place, you'd imagine, at this stage. I don't think Leicester or Chelsea will catch them. I think there's something like 8 points ahead of Leicester, if I'm not mistaken. And, I mean, that should be enough for them, you would think. But, like, they did hammer Liverpool the other night. But Liverpool were definitely on the lash roar for most of the week, I reckon, celebrating. Well, and they weren't quite recovered, I don't think, in time for that Man City game.
It was a combination of a couple of things. You're right. Yeah. First off, was Liverpool celebrating all week as they deserve to, like, you know, they're league champs for the first time in 30 years.
Klopp is the kind of manager who I think encourages that as well, especially when they're nothing to play for.
Go on away, lads. You're grand. It's not like they're in contention for any other trophy this season. And Man City were annoyed at having to give them a Guard of Honour on their own pitch.
That's a big factor too. Yeah.
I think that was a huge factor, and they went out to show, look, actually, hang on a second, we're still fighting, we're still digging, we're still around, we're still going to be here next season, kind of laying down a marker, I suppose, for the next campaign. So yeah, I thought that was very, very interesting. Liverpool fans not really caring, I suppose.
Nobody seemed bothered by it in the slightest. They had the league won and it was done and dusted. And as I said to someone over the weekend, people will remember Liverpool winning the league. Nobody even this time next year is going to remember that Man City game, probably, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So Liverpool getting a win as well yesterday, back to winning ways against Aston Villa, 2-0 win at Anfield. A routine win, really. Sadio Mane and Curtis Jones with the goals. But
Villa are in trouble, though.
They are, and they don't look like they're in any way... Like, they don't look great in any way, shape or form, to be perfectly honest about it.
Not in the slightest. They're still
behind Watford, level with Bournemouth on 27 points. You'd imagine Norwich City are gone at this point, 6 points off, or 7 points off, I suppose, safety, with just 5 games left.
Yeah, Brighton had a good win over Norwich on Saturday, which probably is enough now to make Brighton safe, you'd think.
So you're looking at either West Ham, Watford, Aston Villa and Bournemouth to go down, two of those four to go down, along with Norwich City. So you'd imagine Brighton are safe enough on 36 points, but again, you'd never know, but you'd imagine that they are. But Aston Villa certainly struggling, didn't look at the races at all yesterday.
Not at all. Not at all. They didn't look at the races. They haven't done for many weeks now, even since prior to the lockdown. Villa haven't been at the races, and they're in that position. They had a chance yesterday to jump ahead of Watford because Watford lost to Chelsea on Saturday night and they didn't take it. You might have thought they might have got something off Liverpool if Liverpool were clocked out for the season, but clearly not. And then the teams above them, some of them are picking up points, like West Ham had a win over Chelsea last week. They got a point off Newcastle again yesterday. So Villa are in trouble there. Bournemouth in big, big trouble as well. You wouldn't have expected them to get anything at Old Trafford, even though they had gone 1-0 up initially. But, I mean, they're going to be disappointed with their recent form. And Eddie Howe, he's a bit of a Bournemouth legend and he's a stalwart there. But you'd wonder then, is he in a bit of trouble there as well?
You'd imagine so, because their run of form has been pretty, pretty poor in recently, basically. I think it was at 17 defeats in the last 21 games or something like that. So they are struggling massively at the end of the table. Eddie Howe was touted as like the next big thing.
Talk of England manager and everything a few years ago.
So it's exactly. Talk of being the England manager just shows you how quickly things can turn around unless they get back to action. Soon they are going to be in the Championship next season. I said Liverpool don't have anything to play for. They kind of do.
They have
Man City's target of 100 points in a season.
What are they, 11 points off?
They're 11 points off at the moment. So they need 12 to break City's record of 100. So they need to get 4 wins from their next 5 games. It's possible, it's unlikely, but it's possible. Jurgen Klopp said afterwards he's just not commenting on it, basically. He says it's not worth commenting on.
No, he's not too concerned about it. It would be nice for Liverpool to get that, I think, but it's not. I mean, the league title is what they wanted, the first league title in 30 years. It'd be lovely accolade on top of it, a nice little boast to have, but it's not the be-all and end-all. 5 games left. Like he's playing guys and giving guys time now just to get on the pitch who made up the squad during the season to make sure they get a medal and so on as well. So if he's doing all that kind of thing, you'd wonder, will they actually get four wins out of the 5 games when they're probably going to come up against teams who do have something to play for in terms of European spots and relegation and so on? And the Liverpool players, you know, they're probably zoned out for the season at this stage, as the Man City game showed the other night. But they are such a phenomenal side that you wouldn't put it past them at
the
same time.
They do have a couple of tricky fixtures as well. They have to go to Arsenal at home, to Chelsea as well. Like, you know, so it's not all plain sailing their last 5 games. They've got Brighton away, Burnley at home, and Newcastle away as well. So, like, there's no guarantees there. And they are going to get the 4 wins that they need. But it would be nice for them, I think, and so, like, considering how dominant, I guess, that they have been this season to kind of surpass that Manchester City record. I think Jurgen Klopp would certainly like that.
Absolutely, he'd love it. But as I said, not the be all and end all, but it would be nice kind of icing on the cake for Jurgen Klopp, I think.
Scottish Premiership fixtures have been announced. Celtic are going to begin their campaign against Hamilton Academical.
I always think that's a great name for a club.
It certainly is. That's the 2nd of August is how it's going to kick off. Celtic kicking off their quest for a 10 in a row. The day before, Rangers will get their first game underway. They go to Aberdeen on the Saturday. The first Old Firm derby scheduled for the 17th of October at Celtic Park. Of course, the Scottish Premiership campaign was finished on a points per game basis. I know a lot of Rangers fans hanging that over Celtic fans.
You see, that's the thing. And I was listening to Jim White on Talksport this morning on about this, and they're kind of saying, like, is it a real league title for Celtic? Now, Celtic fans will say yes, it is, but is there always going to be that asterisk next to it?
I don't think Celtic fans care. They don't care.
Rangers fans do, though.
And I think the fact that it annoys their rivals so much, I think they'll thoroughly enjoy that as well. So look, so good to see Scottish football back. It's going to be behind closed doors, obviously,
for the initial games.
It's subject to approval from the Scottish government as well, so that shouldn't be an issue. Another thing we're looking forward to starting in the next couple of weeks is the League of Ireland season, but we still don't have any official fixture confirmation. We just know that there's a return date, but no official confirmation on fixtures yet.
No, there's not, and it's, again, there's a lot of things at play, and it does seem to be the relegation promotion issue is the big factor, as we were chatting about last week. Now, there've been some updates during the week about that. It went to a vote, and Shamrock Rovers were the only Premier Division side not to vote in conjunction with the other clubs. All other 9 clubs voted for one proposal. Shamrock Rovers went with the other proposal along with the First Division clubs, and that was enough to get it over the line.
Which is
one team up and one team down kind of thing, and the playoffs as well.
Well, so obviously the First Division clubs wanted that, but
they did, of course.
The argument from the Premier Division.
But why did Shamrock Rovers go that way? Is the question then? Because it doesn't directly impact them, you'd imagine, because
that's probably why they voted for it.
They're up the top of the table. They're going to be in the top two or three, definitely, whatever way things play out this season with the start they had. So it's caused a lot of anger, and I heard the Sligo chairman on about it, and lots of other clubs as well were speaking on it. And they're not happy, and there's talk of clubs boycotting games and all this kind of things. Things are never easy with the FAI and the League of Ireland and Irish football roar. But like, it is penciled in to start on the 31st of July. I do think it will start on the 31st of July, but I think there's going to be a bit of back and forth over the next couple of weeks of how the format is going to be. As we said, the less relegation chances, the better from a Cork City perspective, I think, this year. But I mean, that's just another element of self-interest from clubs, and every club is looking out for their own interests, of course.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, but obviously with the threat now of finishing ninth and having to go into a playoff with the team that emerges from that mini playoff.
That's
the
current
season,
as it stands, how it will be, unless they change it again.
And Cork City are currently in that relegation playoff spot after their opening five games, following their only points were that win against Finn Harps.
That's right,
was it in March, which was a great game. It's the only game I got
to see
live.
Seems like
so
long ago, doesn't it?
Seems like a different lifetime ago, to be perfectly honest. It seems that long ago. Of course, Cork City have had a couple of those players move on from loan. They're back on the 25th in the Munster Senior Cup out in the farm. It'll also be interesting to see how many people can go into games. That's another issue for another day, I guess. That's going to be quite contentious.
There's the talk of the 500 outdoor gatherings, and I know they're allowing that for a lot of games. GA are assuming they're going to allow that as well at their games. But you're wondering, will that go up? Will that go down? I mean, things are so variable at the moment, Roar, that you could see that drop down to 100, 200 people again, or equally, it could be increased to 1,000 or something. So you really don't know.
You don't know how it's going to go, I guess. And I suppose the Cork City AGM is coming up as well, where they're going to discuss the sale of the club to Trevor Hemmings, the Preston owner.
Again, that's something that's been kind of put on hold. That is something that would have probably been discussed and voted on by now, so under normal circumstances.
But Cove Ramblers are delighted with, obviously, the way it goes. Their chairman, Bill O'Leary, I saw him speaking, saying that he was delighted. He worked hard and argued hard in favour of the playoff from the First Division.
Well, like, you can totally see the First Division club's perspective
there.
Well,
big time, yeah, because, I mean, like, I've said it before, and like, the First Division can be a bit of a graveyard, and it can be very hard to muster enthusiasm. So if the team who's top of the table is well out ahead, there's nothing left for the other teams to play for. Therefore, if there's a playoff, there's more to play for, there's the excitement. Can you imagine if Cove Ramblers got into the playoffs, had a home draw for their playoff semi-final? It would be incredible, because the atmosphere down in Cove, and like, we saw it, like, you see football in Cove, it can be electric. I remember at the Dundalk game in the League Cup semi-final a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was there, yeah.
It was incredible. The atmosphere, the buzz, the result, beating Dundalk with that. Was it Chris Hull got the goal?
That's right.
Absolutely fantastic. So, like, there is that dormant kind of, like, latent support for Cove that just needs to be tapped into. And I think if there was a playoff of Cove to get to that, I think you'd see the crowds coming back to Cove, because
if they're allowed.
That's the thing, like, you know. But you've been in Cove games and there's been 100 people there, and it's just disheartening, because the effort that goes in off the field there by the committee and on the field by the players, it deserves recognition. I just wish more people would go to Cove Ramblers games, because imagine Cove Ramblers in the Premier Division duking it out with Cork City. It'd be fantastic.
It would be absolutely fantastic. I think we had one season of that, maybe it's probably nearly 10 years ago now, where Cove were up and there was local derbies, and Cork City fans would get the train down to Cove, and Cove fans would do vice versa when they were playing up here, and you'd get big crowds at both games, both in St. Colman's Park and in Turner's Cross, and a bit of local rivalry was fantastic. And I think it'd be great for Cove to play the likes of Cork City regularly, to have Shamrock Rovers coming down there, Dundalk, and then you'd see people coming out supporting the local team. And you never know, if they put a good squad together, they could maybe stay in the Premier Division for a couple of years.
I'm just really looking forward to getting back out to watching games at Turner's Cross and St. Colman's Park. As I said at the start of this podcast, watching games on TV, the Premier League with no crowds isn't really working 100% for me, so that way. Just can't wait to watch football in the flesh. It's going to be weird, I suppose, with all the regulations that are in place, but can't wait to see a live game, basically.
It'll be great just to be there anyway, and whatever way it's done, it'll just be great to have it back up and running.
Right, just before we wrap up, I suppose, the big news over the weekend from a GAA perspective was that the GAA were going to punish teams who were inter-county training before September 14th. This is supposed to be a club window only, as clubs get ready to return to the championship. And there have been reports of our counties training, breaking that protocol. They're not supposed to train until September 14th.
Yep.
The GAA president, John Horan, had said that there wouldn't be any sanctions for clubs, or for county sides, excuse me, who do jump the gun. But it's changed now in that county boards are going to be held liable if our counties are training in this club window, which I think is welcome. I think all the clubs, they wanted this window just for club-only activity. So to get clear guidance, I suppose, from the GAA from the very top is welcomed, and I suppose it removes any, I suppose, what's the word I'm looking for? Doubt, I suppose, as to if you can train or not.
Absolutely, it does. I think a lot of counties were kind of doing little bits already, but it's very, very early because they're not going to be playing for months, Roar, as county teams. So, I mean, in terms of fitness and so on, the players training with their clubs should cover that aspect of it. So, like, it's 11 weeks before they're supposed to start training on September 14th. Then they'll have their preseason. So they'd have another 11 weeks on top of their preseason, which adds up to something like 16 or 17 weeks of a preseason before they actually go out and play championship matches. I mean, professional teams don't have a 16 or 17 week preseason in the Premier League across the water. I mean, it just seems excessive. So I think it was good for the GAA to say this and to confirm this, because it gives the clubs full access to the players now. It avoids any battles and any wranglings over players when it's not needed for them to be training with the county just yet, I don't think.
Yeah, and I suppose the GAA have made it clear as well that county sides train before September 14th wouldn't be covered by insurance, which I think was the main thing. There's threats of disqualification as well, as the GAA kind of hardened their stance, I guess.
There was a lot of talk that over the weekend that this is going to work different in different counties, where depending on how powerful the manager is of the county team and how his relationships are with the clubs and so on. So I think in some counties there might be a little bit of behind the scenes training going on regardless, but I think most counties now that the rules are in place and set in stone by Croke Park and GAA officials, you'd imagine they'll abide by it for the time being.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, as you spoke to Joey Blake in this podcast last week, it wasn't so long ago that John Horne was saying there'd be no GAA in 2020 as it is. So to be back and getting ready for a club championship first off, and then the intercounty championship.
And a winter intercounty championship and finishing up Christmas All Ireland finals. So it's got to be different, but it'll be great, yeah.
Yeah, but I suppose the GAA had to come out and say, look, no training until September 14th. And look, there's threats of disqualification hanging over counties as well. So
you'd wonder, would they follow through on that though?
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
You'd wonder.
You know.
Right, that's pretty much our podcast for today. The Big Red Bench will be resuming on air very, very shortly in the next couple of weeks. So we're looking forward to it.
Looking forward to that very much. We'll have plenty to chat about by the end of the month, I think, as well.
Yeah, we certainly will. So keep an eye out for that on our Twitter at Big Red Bench. But I suppose for now, for me, Rory O'Hagan.
And for me, Colm O'Sullivan.
That's it. Good night.
Good luck. See ya. Bye-bye.
Hey. The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.